The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on The Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
Dottie Bailey was recently sworn in as a member of the Missouri House, and the Eureka Republican is transitioning into office and laying out her legislative priorities. Bailey joins us next on the latest edition of Politically Speaking, so let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the longest-running episodic podcast about Missouri politics.
It's a little complicated in Bolivar because there is a Parsons family there.
But we also knew that it was important to make sure that we got to where we needed to go.
You know, if you walk in a room and you're getting ready to make a decision and everybody in the room looks like you, you need to stop.
And right now what happens in the United States Senate is as critical as anywhere else in the country.
I really want the state to succeed.
Well, we want everybody to know that we're all working together.
I just worked hard to try to build my name where I didn't have the money.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me as our special guest this morning.
Oh, hi, Dottie Bailey, Representative Dottie Bailey from District 110.
You are actually the third representative from this general area to be on the show. House Speaker Tim Jones was
Tim Jones, and
Representative Kirk Matthews. It's a really wonderful area of the St. Louis region. I spent a lot of time there during the flood of 2015 and 16 because both Eureka and Pacific, which I think is part of this district too, were heavily affected by those floods. And the people there are just wonderful people. So that's going to be, I'm going to just butter you up and just say I love your district before I pepper you with really hard questions.
No, but you're right. I say it's one of St. Louis's best kept secrets. It's just, it's like a small town within the large, you know, bigger town, and everybody knows everybody. We take care of each other, and it's just a neat place. You do actually walk in somewhere and they say, hey, so it's a neat little town. So I'm happy to be there.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. From following you on social media, you've been politically active for a while, kind of on the grassroots level. I think you were like one of the original St. Louis area Tea Partiers, and now you're in a position where you can actually pass laws and stuff.
Right,
so how did you get to this point?
So a year ago, if you would ask me a year ago that this would happen, I would say you're crazy. So, going back to my 20s, I've just always been a politically aware person, and not an original Tea Party of 2008, 2009, but I was actually home having my babies then. But 2013, I joined the Tea Party when the IRS was cracking down on Tea Party and Tea Partiers. And so I met a lot of people at the IRS out in town and country at that protest. And it's been on since then. So, but yeah, just politically active. I've always, anywhere there's, a liberty issue or anything like that, I've been there. I'm just one of those people that show up to meetings. So, them asking me to run for this office, I'm like, it's my own fault. But no, I'm happy to do it, happy to serve, and been very humbled to do this. So
looking at your social media, I know that you're a supporter of President Trump.
I am.
I know that you are very conservative. But from talking with some Democrats, they've said they had really solid conversations with you. I think that a lot of people on the other side of the aisle with a lot of different ideology are willing to work with you, even though they're polar opposite ideologies.
Absolutely.
So is there kind of like a pragmatic streak alongside some of these principled ideological positions you have?
So unlike President Trump, I have a different approach, and that's just me as a person. I've been in banking for 20 years, and so I have a thing about me where I can get along with people regardless of ideology or principle because I see them as a human being. So I look at a person and I don't go, oh, they're a Democrat, they're a Republican, they're this. I go, oh, they're a human being and they have feelings, and I empathize with them, even though I might truly disagree with them. I try to understand where they come from. And again, that's just me. I can get along with anybody if they'll just talk to me and share a little. Anybody that bears their soul to me, I love. So Democrat comes up to me and shares their story, and they want me to co-sponsor something. And I've already had this happen. And I will say, you know, I'll listen. And I've already told some no. But I say, I respect you and I understand your what you're doing. But then I try to explain myself. And I usually what comes out of my mouth is government always isn't the solution to the problem. And I explain that and they'll look at me. But, you know, and I respect them and I want them to be able to come to me. And I'm not, you know, I may be a bomb thrower here and there on Twitter, but it's more against the left progressive crazies. So the folks in the House, the Missouri House, you know, now ask me next week after we have more debates and they might hate me and I'm no, but, yeah. but I will always look at them as a human being.
I was just going to say, does it help that when you went on the freshman tour, it's a bipartisan tour.
Sure.
And you actually get to know some of these people. And this is a very large freshman class.
Yes.
It seems like that really does help in building bipartisan alliance, even though you don't have to.
Right. We didn't. Yeah. But when you're stuck on a bus for 2 weeks with people, we're going to get to know each other. You know, we had a really good time and it gives you a lot of quiet moments to have real conversations and just, you know, silly conversations too. You know, what, hey, do you have any Kleenex? Do you have any aspirin? You know, we're sharing things and we all have headaches. You know, it's just that's when the humanness, and I'm so glad they do that for the tour because we really got to see and got to know each other. And again, we're going to be very on polar opposite ends on some issues, but other issues we're going to come together. Prison reform, already, you know, that's something we're already coming together in, and we. And so I'm thrilled that there is one issue already that we can kind of get together on.
So let's talk about one of the reasons I wanted to have you on this show. You sponsored a bill that is aimed at changing what is called Bryce's Law, which is a scholarship program for kids with developmental disabilities like autism. As people know on the show, I have a son who is in the special school district, so this is not an issue that I'm just passionate about. In fact, I'm very passionate about it. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I'm going to make sure to emphasize on this show going forward is, even if I may internally may not agree with the approach, everyone who is raising this issue is going to get a fair chance to talk about this issue. Because I think it's very important to elevate this issue of inequities when it comes to special education and inequities of opportunity. So I want you to give me a sense of why you sponsored this bill and how you think it's going to help parents and kids with autism and other developmental disabilities.
Sure. So several months ago, I read about Bryce's bill, the original one that was enacted, or was, I guess it was passed in 2011 by Representative Dwight Scharnhorst. And so I read the whole thing and I realized, oh, nothing has been actually done through that bill. It has sat dead, not dead, but you know, inert for many years, and no scholarship has been granted because the tax credit piece was pulled out because of the Blaine Amendment and so on and so forth. We can talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and like you, I have a son in the special school district, and I realized it's just one of those things that hit my soul, that hit my heart, and coming from the background with my son and what we went through. But one caveat there and some difference that I realize is I live in a district that has the special school district services, and those people are amazing. And I am so fortunate to live there. And but it made me think, my goodness, what if I didn't have these services? And my husband and I at the time, you know, we were just so thankful to all these people. I call them angels. They're angels. And so it really began my thought process of, wow, what about the parents that don't live in these districts? What are they doing? And how do they get these therapies? And then the single moms, you know, what do they do? So, and then I read Bryce's Law and, you know, realized nothing was happening. And so that is my, you know, process of bringing it forward again this year. So, again, did I know I was going to be an advocate for this a year ago? Heck no.
Yeah.
But I love how, you know, things happen for a reason. So I'm happy to do it and happy to advocate for these special needs kiddos that don't have services.
So my understanding is your bill, instead of being necessarily a tax credit, it would direct general revenue into a fund that could be used by parents. Is it to send their kids to either private or other public schools, or is it only private?
All. So if you want to send to a special school, a private school, a public school that has the special services, so it's open to, you know, everyone. And, you know, there are even cases, I remember in my district, where we have a special school district, we had, they had, you know, a student, and I know the mom very well. We became friends because many moms of special need kids, we find each other, and I was a friend to her, and her son, you know, had severe disabilities, and he actually had to go to a different school because, and they had to pay for it. Luckily, they were able to afford it, and they, you know, could send. So, but again, what about those parents that don't have the funds, or, you know? So, again, it made me think, oh my goodness, what about that mom sitting there going, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? You know?
Yeah.
She wants to see her child thrive, but she doesn't, you know? And it's one thing, you know, our Constitution, you know, every child in Missouri has a right to an education, but are we doing that? Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, these forgotten kiddos, I guess, you know, it breaks my heart. So again, I think this bill has a good shot of making it through, because I am bringing up again from 2011, but what about these kids that are left behind? So, you know, it's going to be an interesting thing to see how this works out in the Missouri legislature.
So I have followed this bill for a very long time. Opponents, and that includes Republicans, saw this as the camel's nose under the tent for vouchers and a way of siphoning off money from public schools into private schools. I'm almost guarantee you're going to hear that argument over the next few months. Mm-hmm. And I want to give you a chance to preemptively respond to that, because that could be the biggest cry of opposition to this legislation.
Sure. And if that's the case, that we're siphoning off money from the public schools for school choice, then they need to stop and remember these kids that don't fit a specific mold. One size doesn't fit all. Now, there are amazing public schools here in Missouri, but there are also some that just don't offer these services. School choice in Missouri is the last frontier of liberty that we haven't broached yet. And why is that? I think I know the answer, but and I can put it in a simple phrase. It comes down to money. And you know, in my idea, the child should not follow the money. The money should follow the child. And for anybody that opposes school reform, I guarantee it comes down to money. And those that would oppose this, you know, I might not make any friends right now, but it's coming down to money. It's not coming down to the child. If one child doesn't fit one specific mold and they're in a district or a part of Missouri that doesn't have this, well, you know, they should have the choice. Their parents should have the choice to find them an educational access to help that child thrive. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous that we don't do this. And if it comes down to money, then shame on us that we, you know, will, you know, hurt these kids because it comes down to money. Silly.
I'm going to talk about two different spheres of conflict here, the rural parts of the state and, mm-hmm. and where we are now. Let's mm-hmm. start with where we are now, for example. The reason I've said this like 100,000 times at this point, the reason I moved out of the city of St. Louis mm-hmm. to St. Louis County is many people, including our doctor, said SLPS did not have adequate resources to educate our special needs kid. And I'm not the only person that has dealt with that situation. Mm-hmm. And it really crystallized in me that if I wasn't middle class, I didn't have a car, and if I didn't have the ability to buy a house in the county, mm-hmm. then my son would be in a much worse situation where
right.
the single mom on the north side or the south side are at right now. Mm-hmm. But that does bring in the question that even with this scholarship program, if this parent or this family is not wealthy, does not have the ability to drive their kid to a private school or a public school in the county, mm-hmm. then how practically is this going to work for the family you're trying to help?
Right. So, and first of all, let me say, and what a shame that is that you had to move. I mean, that just, it kills me. And you're the specific example that I remember thinking about. So, what about the single moms and how the transportation's going to work and all of that? So, yeah, I mean, it's in these scholarships, you know, and we haven't worked out all the fiscal notes. And believe me, this is still a work in progress. And, and it will, you know, the wording will be changed in some sorts, and we're going to have to figure all of that out. But, you know, the main essence is to take this money and get this child access to a good education to help them thrive. Again, not all the specifics will be worked out in this process. So, but the main idea, like I said, is, you know, no one should be left out because of their logistical spot where they live in Missouri. It's mm-hmm. it's crazy. And that you had to actually pick up your family and move. I mean, where's the liberty in that? Where's the freedom in that?
Well, I want to bring up another question, the urban part. Mm-hmm. We're both send our kids to the special school district. Mm-hmm. It is, I think, probably one of the best things for parents with special needs mm-hmm. in the entire state. And it's not free, by the way.
Right.
Everybody in the county has to pay this property tax.
Correct.
So when I broach this possibility, I understand that this is not a simple process. But would you have an objection to the city of St. Louis getting the right to join the special school district, which could allow for more money to go into the special education program, pay personnel better, mm-hmm. recruit more people, retain more people? Retention is so important with special
right.
needs kids.
Right.
What do you think about that idea?
Well, I think that's an accreditation issue as far as the St. Louis City Schools. So I'd have to look further into that. But I do not object to that at all. I would love to see the special school district go further. Now, the steps to do that, I do not know.
And neither do I. I right. know that there are real complications to doing that. There's also like pensions and also
yes.
existing people. I want to make it clear that I'm not advocating that. I'm not
right.
saying that it's a painless process. I'm not even sure
if it would
right. even work.
Right.
But I know that the idea of pulling together resources, mm-hmm. I mean, the special school district has so much money right now. They have almost a $200+ million surplus. And the idea is if you included the city's contribution in with the county, I think you would be able to create an ecosystem in SLPS where people wouldn't necessarily move, and maybe even your bill wouldn't be necessary anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I bring up that
yeah,
topic.
I don't know. That's a good question. I can look into it, but I do not know. Like I said,
I want to talk about the rural parts of the state, though,
mm-hmm.
because I think that's another issue.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a situation that if you have a special needs child in rural Missouri, there may not be somebody that can help your child effectively for literally hundreds of miles. Could be a
yep.
situation where your public school does not have the money to recruit mm-hmm. special ed personnel, and mm-hmm. there may not be a private school in the vicinity that where your scholarship could help.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you address that issue? Because I think getting special ed teachers to outstate Missouri has been a problem for years, and it's kind of a separate one from the urban and suburban one, but I
right.
think that I could see your bill not necessarily addressing that problem.
Mm-hmm. No, and you're correct. That is something that we have thought about as well. And as far as that piece, you know, there could be, like, for instance, like Easter Seals. I don't know if you're familiar with Easter
I am, yes.
Seals. So they have their, you know, teachers or whatever you want to call them that will drive out to, you know, areas and such. So, I mean, that's a piece we can look at as well because, yeah, that's definitely, yeah, you know, when there's outliers in the rural area. So, again, there's, you know, it's always a work in progress and definitely something that we've thought about. So
I want to talk, though, transition a little to the
sure.
governor's State of the State speech.
Mm-hmm.
He did mention autism and autism awareness.
Mm-hmm.
He singled out, I think, his niece or great niece
I
or something.
Think he said. Mm-hmm.
Zoe, I think, was her name, by the way. She got a big applause,
yeah,
by the way.
It was very sweet.
What do you think about the governor being involved in this? Because I know his wife, Teresa Parson, has made kind of special needs kids kind of a project for herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad the governor and his wife are engaged on this issue, but I think you kind of touched on one of the tensions here. Solutions to this require money.
Mm-hmm.
You can't necessarily effectively treat something like autism or any other developmental disability
mm-hmm.
without paying the people the money needed
right.
to treat them.
Right.
So I feel like awareness is good. You know, having additional options is certainly in the discussion we're having right now. But I think to really tackle this in the rural, urban, suburban areas, it may require maybe some state, local
yes.
monetary partnership. So that's my observation. What was your observation from the governor talking about that?
We had this conversation earlier coming up the elevator when the governor said that at the State of the State. Now let me backtrack. The entire week has been an amazing week, you know, since Monday. But it's been rather emotional for me because this has stirred up a lot of things that I haven't thought about in a couple of years. As far as when you know, my son was diagnosed and I was in denial. And, you know, you go through these, as you know, you go through these stages of grief and all of that. And I haven't felt these things in a long time. And I'm very much a stoic person, but I have an emotional side as well. But, and so when the governor said that and we turned and we clapped for his great niece, I teared up and I had to fight it back. But it was like this rush of emotion because I felt those feelings again. And so for all of this to come together, for me running and getting elected and finding Bryce's Law and refiling it and then having all these parents and massive support and people coming to me and having these conversations about their kids and they're just like their need and then the governor saying that, it just kind of hit me in the head like, oh wow, this is amazing and it's all coming together. So because it is such an emotional thing when your child is in need and you can't fit those needs. I mean, my goodness, it's a heartbreaking thing. And so to have all of this come together is so wonderful and so special. You know, and anybody that would oppose these things, I would just say, hey, it's time now. It's time for Missouri to step up and help these kiddos. We say we're going to educate every child. But are we going to let them thrive? I say we let them thrive. We, you know, it is going to cost money. And you know me, I'm a Tea Party. I like fiscal responsibility. I like limited government. But I also understand that we have to help the neediest in our state. And my goodness, a needy child in our state that can't get the correct education for their specific needs, that's we need to stop. So I think it's time. And so the governor's state of the state just encompassed the whole week for me. And I was thrilled to hear that.
Let's talk about some other aspects of the governor's speech. I think the main takeaways, if you listen to the governor enough, he's all about workforce development and infrastructure.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Almost to the point where it's like banging in your head like a drum.
Yes.
And he
yes.
kind of fleshed it out a little bit. He's reorganizing the Department of Economic Development by lowering the amount of employees there. He wants to spend some money for workforce development programs. And I think the most eye-popping thing is he wants to bond to fix bridges, mm-hmm. which means they're taking general revenue mm-hmm. and then using it to pay off debt. And, you know, the conservative element of the House and the Senate have been calling for general revenue to go to transportation for a long time. And this is, I guess, finally in that realm. On the other hand, you could argue that this is deficit spending, and you're mm-hmm. basically using money that could be going to other things on transportation that could be with a direct funding source like gas and gas tax. So, no, that was a jumbled observation more than a question. But let's start on the transportation piece. What was your reaction to that? And do you think you could get to support something like bonding for bridges?
So I'll answer your question, but I have to go backwards. So, you know, when that gas tax didn't pass, I didn't vote for it. I wasn't in favor of it. And because we have been putting money into the Highway Transportation Trust for many, many years. And so my thought is, well, we've already put money into that. Why aren't we getting more of it? And so, you know, why aren't we utilizing our federal delegation and saying, hey, you know, Senator Blunt, Senator
Holly.
Thank you. See, that's how new it is.
You were about to say McCaskill, weren't you?
I was. It's, you know, it's so new in my mind. And so why don't we go to our federal delegation and say, hey, you know, now it's our turn. The Northeast, you know, all they have amazing infrastructure. And so I don't know if anybody caught it. I don't know if you caught it. It was while I was on the bus tour, Senator Blunt came out with these grants, these build grants. We got $20.5 billion for Sunbridge in Kansas City, and then another $10 billion. And then a week later, we got $90 billion and build grants specifically for infrastructure. So they're starting to come. And I'm still of the mind, we've already paid into this. 18.4 cents per gallon goes into the federal.
About right. I don't know what the specific is.
It's in that ballpark. So we've been paying this since the Reagan administration. So we've already paid that tax. So I was cheering Senator Blunt. I was retweeting. I was like, and I don't know if anybody knows this. And so, you know, to take it out of the general revenue, will I support that? I don't know. I still kind of want to, you know, let's start ringing their phones, Senator Blunt and, you know, Senator Hawley.
So basically, I want to make sure I understand you. You basically want to put more pressure on the Missouri delegation to bring back federal money so that the state doesn't have
to. Yes, we've already paid that tax. We've been paying it for years and years and years. Now it's our turn. Now let us be the recipients.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know we've gotten a little bit. I know they have it trickle out every year, but I thought it was great. So I don't know. Do I need to call Senator Blunt's office? I'll happily do that.
And wouldn't there have to be a state match, though, to that? I mean, there would have to be some state contribution, even if the feds come in and give us a lot of money, though, right?
Well, not if it's through the grant. I could be completely wrong. But if it's through these build grants, mm-hmm. And if you look at a grant, it's all one big fund. It's our taxpayer money coming back to us. You know, that's the way I look at it. That's our money that we've put in. Now it's coming back to us in our time of need. So is that going to be the cure-all? No, but it's a lot. I mean, look, we've already got, $130 million from those grants, you know, put back in. That's after the tax, the gas tax thing didn't pass on the ballot. I thought it was fantastic. So, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I'm just, I want to see kind of how it works out.
You mentioned, though, the prison aspect. And mm-hmm. what you were alluding to is the governor is basically going to close a prison in Cameron, move mm-hmm. the personnel and prisoners to other parts of the state. Mm-hmm. And he also is really hammering home on, quote unquote, criminal justice reform. So drug treatment. Mm-hmm. I don't think he specifically said anything about sentencing changes, but I know that Elijah Haar has definitely mm-hmm. talked about that. You know, we go back 10 years, this wouldn't have been a Republican issue, but now it seems to be the Republican cause célèbre. Going back to the Tea Party mm-hmm. connection, Bill Hennessy, I know, mm-hmm. was a big proponent of Senate Bill 5 and lowering the percentage of money, percentage of money that cities could keep in their budget from fines and fees. So I know that on the grassroots level, there is some symbiotic relationships here with maybe some more progressive Democrats. What do you think happens in the legislature on that front this year?
Like I said, I think we're all on the same page. And I love Senate Bill 5, by the way. It was taxation by citation. Remember that little verbiage? So it's, for an example, one of the other representatives was telling me the other day, an 18-year-old got caught with some pot and he got 10 years in prison, 10 years, and I mean, that's just insane.
Would it be because it was like a probation violation or something like that?
You know, some bizarre thing, it just doesn't match it just doesn't match. And so, they're just hurting lives and the federal dollars we're spending on those 10 years for that kid essentially is insane. So, those types of small changes will make massive, massive, effects on government spending and just on lives in general. So, those types of thing, I pray that we change on, just saving the money and rehabilitation. And, again, my heart is I look at everybody as a human being, even if these, criminals, if you want to call, some of the light sentencing and some crimes, rehabilitation, getting people back into the workforce, getting them the help they need. Again, it all takes money, but that we can consolidate and that no one's going to lose their job. They said that over and over, and I'm glad for that. And, some of these guys that work at the prisons, they guys and gals, they don't make a lot of money, and the turnover rate is so high, and we need to keep those wonderful people there, and just to train somebody costs thousands of dollars, and then they leave after a couple months. I heard that on the tour as well is a really big problem. So that's something we can all come together. But, I hope a lot of these heavy sentencings for these light violations will be reformed.
My state senator, Carla May, has put forward a bill that kind of eases away from mandatory minimum sentences and allows judges to have more discretion over mm-hmm. that. Is that something that you could possibly be amenable to as well?
Yes, especially if you look at, that's something fantastic because a judge hopefully will have the wisdom and forethought to look at the crime and let the punishment fit the crime, and if the punishment is rehabilitation or something like that, my goodness, I think that will be wonderful. And if it's not a heavy awful crime than, you know, if they just made a dumb mistake, you know. A lot of people just make mistakes. And in this culture, in this day and age, I mean, unfortunately, we've gotten to a point where, you know, babies are raising babies and people are making a lot of mistakes. And so, you know, I've made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. So if we can get wise judges to, I don't know, sometimes play father, I hate to say that, but and let the crime fit the punishment and not go overboard, I think. And that's something I could, now, don't quote me because I would love to read the bill, of course.
Yes.
But, you know.
I was just talking about the general idea, not
general
the specific
idea
bill.
In essence, I think it's a great idea.
Let's talk about something else that happened in that House this week, and that you agreed on the rules, and that actually became a bit controversial because of the record retention part of it. And I know this has actually been kind of stirring some consternation among lawmakers internally.
Yeah.
So basically, for our listeners that don't know, Amendment 1, which is known as Clean Missouri, basically said that lawmaker emails are open records.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Clean Missouri proponents said that the legislators still had the ability to change statute and decide what was open and what was not open. But you all decided via rule to close certain constituent information and legislative strategy information. Now, I'm going to make the same general statement I made to Elijah Haar, Crystal Quaid, and Dave Schatz. I have no interest in sunshining your constituent emails. There's no news value in just getting Citizen X writes to you about issue Y and then publishing their personal information without asking them. Like, that violates journalistic ethics, and there's no news value to
that. And that's
what
we're doing. That's all we're protecting the constituent. Because as you know, the constituents come to us in email form sometimes, and they reveal personal information and names and so on and so forth of whatever's happened. And for that to end up on the Sunday edition front page of Post-Dispatch is awful. So that's what we're doing. We're protecting constituents.
Could constituent, though, as defined under the rules, be used to also include lobbyists or heads of corporations if they're in your district, for example? Because I'm not in favor of closing those records, to be honest.
No, I agree. Now, as far as legally that, I don't know. I don't know, and I would have to find out on that. And I agree with you. That would be sunshinable, but as far as the law is on that, I don't know.
Now, what about the legislative strategy piece? Because we've had other people basically say, like, we don't want the ability for our political adversaries to be able to sunshine our emails and know what we're doing. On the other hand, though, that doesn't really reach the same sensitivity as constituent email. By closing some of those records off, you could be closing information to the public that may need to be known about something. That it's not as sensitive as constituent information. So why did you all decide to do that?
Well, again, so the House rules, you know, we are able to change, and that was made by leadership. And again, there may be some sensitive material, you know, if we're speaking on a specific amendment or something like that. So, you know, that's you know, it all has to do with privacy. And, you know, any opponents of this, if, you know, they would have to you know, there's going to be some FERPA laws that, you know, that some of this would be violating if we were sharing all this information with the world. So there's a lot of just constituent confidentiality that will be in emails. So, you know, we've taken that right to say, no, we're not going to share that right.
This is more of a technical question than a philosophical one. But I think that maybe the conflict here is that you did this by rule as opposed to passing a statutory change that would have to go through the Senate and then go to the governor. Has there been any concern that if somebody challenges it and says, you did this by rule, you need to actually go through the legislative process to do this, you may have to do this all over again and do what I just said?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, yeah, and that's very possible. So, you know, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. And for right now, our main concern is we're protecting our constituents. We don't want their names. I mean, again, if you look at somebody that, say, they email me and, you know, their supporter and but I have an enemy out there, and they're like, oh, well, you know, we're going to blast. You know, it could get really ugly and political. And so we want to protect those constituents. Or they come to me, you know, talking about some kind of sexual abuse case. You just don't want to be sharing that information. So we've taken it upon ourselves to protect, you know, our constituents and people. So if they want to challenge that, then, you know, like I said, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Well, this is part of a bigger issue about Clean Missouri. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of Republicans, we were talking about the sunshine piece, but I think the real conflict is the redistricting piece, which right. I think the legislature, I don't think it's a question of if, it's a matter of when. Mm-hmm. I think there are enough Republicans to put the redistricting part up for a vote, either getting rid of it and reverting to the old system or making changes to mm-hmm. it. The question is, are you all going to do it this year? Are you going to do it next year? And are there going to be a number of African-American Democrats that are going to join you or not? That's really the only suspense. I think this is an inevitability. Mm-hmm. But am I wrong on that? Or do you think that—
I mean, it's been talked about. You know, nothing's been put forth as of yet that I'm aware of. Again, I'm a lowly freshman.
I know. But, you know, I know this issue has really made a lot of Republicans angry.
Even before the election, yeah, we spoke about it a lot. And let me— I always want to— a lot of people don't mention this, and that's always something that it just it sticks me in the gut. This Clean Missouri didn't come from Missourians. It came from George Soros' pocket. He was the one that, you know, they always talk about dark money. I mean, you can't get any more dark than that. $300,000 to all these Missouri groups, and that, you know, that, and that's how this got on the ballot.
Well, I mean, he was one donor.
He was
one. There were a number of other big donors, and then there was also a lot of small donors to this, too.
So when the other day on the floor, I forget who it was, says we're subverting the Missouri Constitution, if you can't win an election by a voter in that district, if you can't win an election by that, so you're going to go and change the rules so you can win an election. That's essentially what's happening. So you talk about subverting the Constitution. That is something that it really irritates me that, oh, we're subverting the Constitution. You can't subvert the Constitution any more than going and changing the rules because you can't win an election. So, you know, that piece, it really was an irritant to me because I'm like, if you look where the money came from, it's these lefty groups, yes, lefty billionaires, one not even in our own country, coming into our country saying, giving money to all these groups saying, okay, change the rules so we can win. How are they going to win? They're going to redistrict. Mm-hmm. So, but yes, also, many of the minority Democrats will be on board with this, I hope, because they will lose seats as well. So, you know, like I said, the whole subverting the Constitution is really inert to me.
Yeah, I think George Soros, by the way, has dual citizenship in Hungary and in the United States. I did check that on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I do want to ask about that, though, because, you know, Democrats throw like ideas away all the time because they're like, well, Rex Singfeld supports that. David mm-hmm. Humphrey supports that. Mm-hmm. You know, Stan Herzog supports this. And, you know, Republicans push back against that. Like, you know, we support these ideas. These funders are just giving money to make get those ideas off the ground. Mm-hmm. I could imagine Clean Missouri proponents are going to say, yeah, we got money from George Soros' 501c4, I think. But it's the same principle. Why are you attacking the donor and not the idea? I know you're attacking the idea, by
right,
the way.
Right, right.
But,
yeah.
Like, why does that matter if people like the idea, basically?
Well, you know, so when you put something on the ballot like that, and when you put something on the ballot and you get a tiny paragraph to read, of course, you're not going to get the whole picture. So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess I can understand that argument. But this specific thing, when it comes down to elections and districting, it's a bigger deal than putting bingo on the ballot. I mean, I hate to, you know, but this is a real U.S. Constitution type thing where it's, you know, this is how our founders, they weren't thinking about billionaires coming in and, you know, and changing the Constitution via a ballot initiative. So it's just, yeah, I mean, you can make that argument and I'll push back, but, win at the ballot box. Mm-hmm. Don't change the rules. So,
but they did win at the ballot box. That's what
they're
going to say.
Right. They did. But it's through these ballot initiatives, which are also an issue as well. So, you know, it's just something that it's underhanded, I guess, is what I want to say.
But you would probably let's get to the real question. If something came up that would repeal or change the new redistricting system, you probably would vote to put it on the ballot at this point. But you have to see what it is, because that's the other unknown question. We don't know what this package is going to look like.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, the districts, we haven't had a problem with them other than we keep winning, but that's the will of the people. So, you know, I say we, the Republicans, keep winning, but, you know, that's how the election process, you know, everybody's like screams about a democratic process. We have the most democratic election process on earth. So, you know, but it's because, and you see it across the country, you see when they don't win, they're, oh, you know, it's this or it's that. It's not, no, you have to convince your voters. So, you know, it just comes down to that. And so, again, they're not winning, so they want to change the rules. And I say they, I don't mean our Democrats. I mean, you know, the leftists, the socialists. And, you know, this has been on the table for many years on, you know, these clean Missouri. You know, we're not the first state and we won't be the last where these things happen.
Yeah. Although, and this will be my last thought before we move on to another topic, the clean Missouri people would point out there were a lot of major notable Republicans that supported it too. Now, probably not Republicans that you necessarily like, but they were trying to present it in a bipartisan manner. And there were Republicans that endorsed it too.
Rob Schaff. Yeah.
Jim Lemke, who I think has endeared himself well to a lot of conservative people. John Danforth, maybe not so much, but, you know, I understand what you're saying. There certainly were a lot of left of center groups that organized and funded for it. But I think it's also factually true that it won in rural counties and it got some actual Republican voters' support. Whether it happens again, I guess we'll just have to
see. We'll have to see. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I know Rob Schaff and Lemke. I had, you know, I discussed it with him and, you know, we did not agree for sure. And so, you know, I was very disappointed to see that. I like Jim Lemke. But, you know, it was an odd year last year. And, you know, I hate for Missouri to give their sovereignty away to George Soros. And I know there were others, but, you know, when we start taking money from the likes of him and other socialists who don't have America's best interest in mind, nor Missouri's, it kind of breaks my heart. So it's, yeah, we'll see. But, you know, it's something that we got to kind of look forward to and figure out where we go from here.
Yeah. So, before we move on, I'm sure there's people that like George Soros and don't see him as a socialist and like what he does, but we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
City county merger, that's going to affect St. Louis and St. Louis County quite a bit. Is there a legislative role here, or is it just going to be like Rex Ziegfeld is going to fund this and the legislature is going to not do anything to combat it, and we'll just decide whether St. Louis or St. Louis County are just one gigantic city after this?
I think the biggest thing right now is it going to be a statewide ballot issue? So there's been talk in the legislature about that and deciding what to do. And I've heard points for it, points against it. You know, again, I'd like to see the whole thing before I make my final decision. But, you know, if it's going to be a vote, shouldn't it be the city and county?
Yeah, well, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that the proponents are basically saying you have to do this statewide because you have to change the Constitution. There are some cynics who say they're doing it that way because it couldn't pass in the county and the city.
Right.
So this is the way to actually achieve their goal.
Right.
But on the other hand, I'm going to just play devil's advocate on their side. You look at St. Louis County, huge amount of layers of government, like 89 cities, lots of, you know, police departments. Compare someone like St. Charles, which only has like 13 cities and very well-established police departments. The outside looking in could be like, this is a mess, and we need to just start over and start with a new government like that's being proposed. Right. What would you say to that?
I guess, and I'm looking at as a District 110 Eureka resident, as we discussed earlier, it's a great place to live. Now, I look as, do I want to turn my city sovereignty where we, you know, we take care of our own water, our own sewer, or, you know, the thing, our own police. Do I want to turn that over to one big group? I don't know. Again, I got to figure that out, you know, when that all comes out. I don't know if I'm comfortable with that. I don't, you know, and I look at the problems the city has had, and I just, I don't know that I'm comfortable turning all of that over to one big, huge governmental entity. Now, I do agree that there are too many municipalities that, you know, are very small, and, it, you know, that is a mess. So, but I don't know that this would be the ultimate answer. Now, is there a alternative to Better Together? I know someone is working on it because I do agree if we don't want this, something should be done.
Well, that was what I was going to say. I know that Gina Walsh, for example, has put forth a non-binding resolution, but I'm going to be brutally honest here. If you all just pass a non-binding resolution saying this should be city and county only and do nothing else, mm-hmm. you basically are working for the Better Together side.
Right. Right.
I'm not saying that's good or bad,
right.
but you're basically doing nothing, mm-hmm. and you're basically going to let this go on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the more practical question is whether you're going to put like a corresponding constitutional amendment that would be voted alongside this constitutional amendment mm-hmm. that would say this doesn't go into effect unless the city and the county vote for it,
right.
which some may see as a poison pill,
mm-hmm.
but others may see as an important principle that the city and county residents deserve to decide their own fate.
Sure.
So what do you think about that idea?
I know it's being talked about. It's really all I can say. I mean, everything is, all options are on the table. You know, we're all talking to our constituents, and it's being talked about.
It is being. Well, I know that Senator Nasheed, who actually just recorded mm-hmm. a podcast before that,
yep.
has actually filed something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my other question, though, is I know that Rex Singfeld is not universally popular among Republicans or Democrats, but he is an influential thought leader, especially on tax policy,
mm-hmm.
Among a lot of Republicans. He's also a major donor to the Republican Party and some Democrats, too. Do you think that he may nudge some Republicans not to go along with that? So his initiative petition, not his initiative petition, but Better Together's initiative yeah. petition has a better chance of going forward.
All right. Well, for his tax piece, I know he's a big proponent of getting rid of the 1% city earnings tax. So I get that. It's possible. I mean, billionaires do a lot of things, as we know, as we just talked about. It's possible that he may nudge, but the consensus with the West County representatives is none of us really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we have to see it on the 28th,
mm-hmm.
But it's possible. You know, Rex, I know, does get a bad name, but he also is really good on education reform and other things. I mean, you know, Show Me Institute, you know, so it's always a...
It's possible for you to agree with him on some things,
Absolutely.
But disagree with him on other things.
Yeah, so it's I just hate that we have to pigeonhole ourselves into one little pocket. And so it's, again, I don't know that Better Together is the end-all, be-all solution. Nothing ever is, really. It's always going to be problems. But is there an alternative? I know some alternatives are being worked on. So.
The other alternative to what I guess is being proposed, which is basically having the city and the county have a unified government similar to Indianapolis or mm-hmm. Louisville or Nashville. St. Louis could join the county as a municipality. They could pay property taxes when it comes to health, parks, streets. You pool the resources together. The city doesn't have to have those departments.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some cost savings there. On the other hand, and let's talk to this from a purely political standpoint, you do that, a Republican is never elected countywide office ever again. Like, the Republican Party pretty much dies after that point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Republican Party's not doing that great in St. Louis County now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you saw the election results with Josh Hawley and Claire McCaskill. 116,000 votes is catastrophic for mm-hmm. Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we've already crossed that bridge. But does that factor into this discussion at all about the political
yeah.
ramifications or not really?
No, it does, because from what I understand, so the If Better Together went through, it would be like a mini like district where you have like 30 aldermen.
I've heard 33. I'm not sure
yeah.
though.
And so probably at first it would be catastrophic for the Republicans, but as we went forward, again, you know, this is all just theory, but we would have districts and many legislators or what have you would be these aldermen, and, you know, they have to represent, some of it has to represent the county, obviously. So, you know, eventually after the first wave goes through, you know, we would have, you know, proper representation. But again, I don't,
it's hard talking about this because we don't know what,
I know we're kind of,
we've seen bits and pieces of the plan. Right. I've heard rumors abound. I don't know what's going to happen to the earnings tax after this.
Right.
I could speculate, but I am really looking forward to seeing this report.
Same here.
Even though I definitely have been talking a lot about how it's been voted, I do think this is an important discussion to have about what our government and our region looks like from a governmental standpoint. So in that respect, I am thankful that they're bringing this up, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, everything's on the table right now. A lot of discussions. Like I said, it's been a busy week and my head's about to explode, but it's good. It's good.
Well, I'm gonna prevent your head from exploding by cutting this off. Representative, thank you so much for coming on today. We'll have you back in the future for
sure. Thank you so much.
For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Follow me on Twitter, Jay Rosenbaum. How would people follow you on Twitter or any other parts of the World Wide Web?
Yes. So Twitter is at rep.dottieb4mo. And then on Facebook, I am Dottie4Missouri.
Letter or number?
Number.
Yeah,
four.
That's important. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Until next time, so long.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.